Welcome to Open House, the real estate and mortgage show on News Talk 580 CFRA. If you have any questions about mortgages or real estate, give us a call at 521-TALK. That's 521-8255.
And so another Saturday of radio brilliance is about to begin with Frank Napolitano and Paul Rushforth. Good morning, gentlemen.
Why? Good morning. Who else is here?
Did you bring on? You must have brought on a guest for that game.
Buongiorno.
Here we go. The last weekend of September, the first weekend of fall, and I'm wearing socks. What's up with this?
Feels like November already. Wow.
It really does. It went from, you know, a 27 degree day to a, you know, it was 1 degree last night. Like, it was pooping cold last night.
Well, at least, you know, if you're buying a house, the furnace works.
Well, that's it, right? I mean, you went from having your AC on to having your heat on, right? So it says, yeah, this is a good time of year to make sure that your furnace actually is serviced and clean. You change your filter because it's last thing you want is your furnace to conk out on cold days like this.
Well, and even if you're selling, right? Because at least it's good to tell people it's all been done.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, when you're selling, the last thing you want to do is replace your furnace, yeah. Mainly because that's an expense that, you know, you're never getting the money back because people just expect a working furnace. But you know what? This time of year, it's great to, I mean, a lot of times when they do inspections, they're going to go in, they're going to check the furnace, they're going to check the filters. And then you go in there and that filter's all disgusting and your furnace is disgusting. People are going to think this house is gross. This house is dirty. So just make sure even little things like that, that you spruce up and you clean up.
Are we back to inspections again now? Everybody getting one?
We are back to inspections. Absolutely. I wouldn't say every property is getting conditionally sold, but I mean, when you look at the number of listings on the market, we have 3,740 active listings on the market, 263 conditional sales. So, you know, there's more and more conditionals every single week. The staggering number, though, is the price decreases. We have had almost 400 price decreases over the last week, which is, you know, during our pandemic and our crazy months, it was like anyone reduced the price and there was obviously something wrong. No one was reducing prices. But our cancels and expireds are quite high, too. Our cancels and expireds are 306. So we're not seeing much change than we have over the last 2 weeks, other than the market is still very sluggish. It's a great market for buyers minus the interest rates, but it's a great market for choice for buyers. So, you know, anyone who's sitting on the fence before and maybe they, you know, maybe they're locked in for a decent rate, now's the time. There's lots of opportunities, lots of homes. Unfortunately, most likely your rates are not where you want to get,
well,
where
I'm guessing,
you want to be.
I'm guessing that's why the cancellations, right? People are waiting to see if rates are going to come down.
I think so. I did an article this week for the OBJ and they're kind of asking me about, you know, about the market and where I predict it and stuff like that. And I used a lot of the stuff that we got last week from Ben, Rabidu, who came on the show. And because that's what I've been preaching to my team. And I totally agree with that. I do think we're going to have a very stagnant 2023 until we start seeing everything stabilized and rates coming down a little bit. I think we're just going to have a very stagnant 2023, which is not a bad thing. It's just back to a normal market. We're not seeing the sellers hit the home runs anymore. We're just seeing a normal market, win for a buyer, win for a seller still.
Well, we're not alone, Frank. The feds in the States raised their rate. The Brits raised their rate.
Yeah, all expected. They're all trying to fight inflation. What they're not, you know, what they talk about oil and oil's retrieving and retrieving and retrieving, yet our inflation numbers are still high. The reason for that is, let's call a spade a spade. Once prices go up on certain items, very difficult for them to come back down. So we're not going to see food prices come back to the levels that they were at in, you know, a year ago, just because oil prices come back down, because these are corporations. There's greed involved. There's profits involved. And they'll keep the profits up because they'll come to terms with the fact that consumers are now used to paying that amount for something. So it's become a habit for them. So we'll bring it down a little bit, but we're certainly not going to bring it down. If bananas were 29 cents a pound and now they're 69 cents a pound, they'll bring them back down to 49 cents. But you know, that's still not helping because, as you saw with the inflation numbers this week, food is the biggest one right now. So food has really driven the inflation numbers high. And Bank of Canada, the Feds, the Brits, they're all using this as a reason to increase the prime rate, not to mention the fact that the other part that doesn't get talked about is the government debt. The fact that the government debt's at the levels that it's at right now, and that's the other reason that we're seeing inflation numbers where they are.
Well, plus we pay more in that debt now, too, don't we?
Of course we do. We're paying more on the debt. Now, again, their tax revenue is likely much higher, obviously. The cost of everything is higher, then there's more tax revenue. But at the end of the day, the spending is still at stupid levels. And until that gets calmed down a little bit, which I don't see in the near future, I think our inflation numbers will continue to remain high.
Bank of Canada gets together in October, right?
The end of October. So we'll have one more set of inflation numbers. Now, they did come down slightly. Not as much as I'd like to see. And I'm hoping that October, with the fuel prices coming down as much as they have, oil retrieved, oil retrieved again yesterday. So, you know, we're, and again, I mean, you talk to most people that are putting gas, they're happy paying $1.40.
Yeah.
You know, because again, we got mentally prepared to pay $2 and now we're at $1.40. We all think we're getting a deal when in actuality, the price of gas should probably be in the $1.20s instead of $1.40.
You think we'll see the rates from the bank hit 6%?
The Bank of Canada?
No. Our banks. Interest rate. Five-year rate.
Well, right now, I don't see the fixed rates. Oddly enough, the bond market retrieved a little bit this week. So despite all the news of the Brits and the Feds going up 0.75%, the bond market came down about 10 basis points for a five-year bond this week. So I don't know that I think what we're going to see in 2023 probably be prepared for, where the variable rate mortgages will be more expensive than the fixed rate mortgages. So almost driving people to take a five-year fixed at, in my opinion, still artificially high rates, but just lower than the prime rate than the variable. Therefore, people will go towards that fixed. And then if we do hit a recession and we start to see rates come down towards the latter part of 2023, people are going to kick themselves for taking a five-year fix because they won't be able to get out of it without a penalty. So,
well, and you know, the one thing that happens in a real estate, the one thing that usually goes up through a recession is the real estate, mainly because we're going to see interest rates come down. We have limited supply. So I think we're going to see real estate, if we do hit into a recession, which, let's be honest, we're heading to a recession, if not in a recession. We will see I believe we'll see the real estate prices rise and number of sales rise as well.
And when do you think that'll happen, Paul?
It all depends. I mean, I agree with what Ben said last weekend about, you know what, let's see what happens in spring. And I'm sort of in that too. And there's a lot of people that are in that wait and see game. I mean, I've talked to a lot of sellers that are deciding not to put their house on the market right now. They're going to wait until the spring. Is that a good idea? I don't know. I don't have that crystal ball to say that is a good deal. Good idea, sorry. But who knows? I mean, I'd like to see us get through the first maybe 3 months of 2023 before anyone can really have a prediction of where I see things going. I do think our average sale price will increase next year, but just marginally. I do think the number of sales will be down too until we can see those interest rates starting to drop.
If all these people hold off until the spring, though, because of their fear now of not getting as much as they think they can for their house, are we not going to have a glut of homes on the market in the spring? And then doesn't that bring prices down?
And Paul, are sellers telling you that they're waiting because they're anticipating that hopefully interest rates come down, which will bring more buyers on the market? I mean, that's what they're hoping for. Yes. So if it doesn't happen in the spring, I mean, that might be a delayed reaction until the fall instead of in the spring.
Yeah, I agree. And Steve, yes, I mean, usually our spring market is our biggest market, but there's a lot of competition on the market. And if people are waiting now until the spring, there's going to be that much more competition. If we can get rates down, we can absorb all that inventory. I mean, let's be honest, we're still listing starved, even though we're at, you know, almost 3,800 listings on the market, we're still listing starved. And like I mentioned last week and the week before, our millennials are there in their peak years for buying properties. And there's not enough properties for those millennials to buy. They're sitting out right now because of the interest rates. But I think if we see that perfect storm with the interest rates dropping, inventory rising a little bit, and people ready to buy again. So that could be happening come that spring market. It might be a little bit delayed, like Frank says. We could see that spring market be more of a, you know, a late spring, early summer market instead.
See, the way I would look at it, everybody's got to pay the same interest rate. So it's a level playing field. So I'd want to get on while there are fewer homes on the market as opposed to when there's more homes on the market.
And it's about cost. Yeah. It's about cost.
And you know what, Steve, that's not about, like, listen, I had a conversation with three sellers this week. Two of them decided to wait until spring and I didn't disagree with them. And the other one decided to get on the market now. And I didn't disagree with them either. It all depends on your area, what's happening in your area, and what kind of product you have. You know, the two of them that are waiting till spring, there was 32 comparables in one area. I mean, so they're just going to get lost. And what happens in that, in when there's that many comparables, it's a battle to the bottom. It's who could go the lowest, the quickest to get their home sold. And is that what you want? Do you want to go to battle to the bottom? Because that's what's happening right now. People are having to battle to the bottom. Let's get it dropped. Let's get it sold. Then who cares about everybody else?
But not all areas are like that, right?
No. Like, for example, I was doing, when I look at the listings in the three areas, the three biggest areas of Orleans, Barrhaven, and Kanata, when I looked in Orleans, I looked at sort of my old area, which was like, you know, a lot of new home building going on, newer homes. And there was something like 90 comparables, like large variety comparables. I didn't do any price range, but there was like 90 comparables. Then I went into the area where my girlfriend used to live in Chapel Hill North. There was three comparables. So, you know, certain areas have no product on the market. And certain areas have tons of product on the market. And it's mainly where we're seeing lots of product on the market. It's usually where there's new home builders and newer homes. That's where we're seeing a lot more product on the market.
So that should enter into the equation of whether you list now or wait.
It absolutely should. I mean, like the person I told to get on the market now, they had no comparables. So I said, get on the market now. Worst case scenario, it doesn't work. We put it back on in the spring, but you don't have a lot of competition. The two that I said to wait, they wanted to wait anyways, but the two that I said to wait, I said, it's not a bad idea. There's a lot of comparables right now. Hopefully they get absorbed or they come off the market, but I can't predict that it's not going to be like this in the spring either. So let's just see what happens in the spring.
Before we go to break, where would I find out that information, Paul?
Where would you find out what information?
Of what markets, what markets I should list in and which I shouldn't. Anybody you can think of that I should call?
I mean, maybe me. I do know my markets very well.
521-TALK, 521-8255. We'll be right back.
We return to Open House, the Real Estate and Mortgage Show on News Talk 580 CFRA.
Welcome back. Hey, StatsCan came out with some numbers this week. Some of them really surprised me. According to StatsCan, between 2016 and 2021, 40.4% of new homes built are rented out.
40%?
Yeah.
And you don't want to know why that is? The reason that is because that's when builders started to build more high density properties. So, which naturally turn into rentals, but 40% is high, really high. That actually shocks me.
Yeah. It is.
But the low interest environment brought that on. I think right when we hit the rock bottom rates, we're seeing investors come out saying, you know what? I can afford to carry this because I'm getting a mortgage at 2.5%. And with my rental income, I can carry it. Now, that number will decrease sharply over the next year or two.
Or remain flat, because who the heck's going to buy an investment property now? Or who's even going to buy a new house, right?
Right.
Well, hold on. You say that, though. Yes, the rates are high, so you're definitely not going to be cash flow positive. But we're now starting to get into an environment where you're being able to find some deals now. Townhomes that used to be, you know, 700 are now, I'm seeing some listed at 599. Like, you know, so you might be able to get some deals right now. So yes, it's not ideal to buy investment properties right now because of the rates, but it's ideal because of the market.
Agreed on the pricing, but the reason the pricing is low is because the interest rates are high and it's knocked out a bunch of people out. So, you know, if you're an investor and you're buying a $600,000 townhouse today, your cost is $3,500 to carry it with the way the interest rates are today. $2,400 you're getting on a townhouse maybe?
24, 25.
So unless you've got your own cash, right? You got cash sitting in a bank account and you want to buy a property and you've got a significant down payment, or you put $200,000 down payment, then all of a sudden now you can cash flow it. But you've given up the return on that $200,000.
Yeah, true.
There's another interesting number. 10 million households own their own home, 5 million rent. And the gap is narrowing now. More people are going to be renting than buying.
100%. Yeah. There's no question.
Yeah. Yeah, the gap is definitely narrowing. We're, you know, the rental market right now is actually still saturated, though, which is shocking, because, you know, it's easy to get places rented out right now. But there's a lot of people that are transitioning from selling their house to renting their house right now, because either one, they're struggling to sell it, and maybe they bought something, so they got to do something. So they're actually renting out their house. And we have, I think that we have probably more rentals right now than we've had in a long time, mainly because some of those were people who were trying to sell, who were struggling to sell because of what's going on in the market, are now renting their properties out.
And yet the rents don't seem to be coming down. They're going up.
They are going up. And you know, listen, it was just a, you know, maybe 4 or 5 years ago that, you know, an average rent for a, you know, a townhome suburbia was $1,500, $1,600. Then it crept up to $1,700, $1,800. Then it was $2,000. Now, if you're renting it for less than a decent sized townhome in suburbia, if you're renting that for less than $2,300 a month, you're making a mistake. I've seen some people asking $2,600 a month. But like Frank said, if you went and bought that for $600 and your mortgage is $3,500 on it a month, and you're only getting $2,500. That's $1,000 underwater. And I mean, yes, you have a renter paying it down for you, but $1,000 on an investment that you're losing every month is not really a great investment, unfortunately.
Yeah, the other part we have to accept is the fact that if somebody's renting a townhouse and rented it 3 years ago at $1,500 or $1,600, yeah, the rents may have gone up 2% per year, but at the end of the day, they're not going to move from one house to another to go up to $2,300 in this environment right now where everything else is so much more expensive. They're going to try and keep their costs down. So again, from an investor standpoint, you know, for them, I mean, they're hoping that somebody moves out and they can rent it out for $500 or $600 more. But the likelihood of people doing that is slim these days.
It is. And I'm in that bind right now. Luckily, I had one of my tenants who was paying decent money, but nowhere near market rent. He decided to leave and buy a house with us. So we helped him buy a house. And I was able to rent that unit out for $400 a month more than what he was paying, which was the market rent. I have a couple of my townhomes right now where I have renters in there that I wish they would leave because they're paying nowhere near market rent. And the increase is like one of them I was able to increase $24 this year. Like, that's not enough. I mean, but the problem is.
Yeah, but you think back, Paul, when you rented those properties out, you thought, wow, I never thought I'd get this much.
Rates are low, right, on the mortgage. Where we're going to see this really hit the wall, I think, Paul, is when those mortgages come up for maturity and all of a sudden you're going from 2.5% on your mortgage to 5% on your mortgage and you're seeing your mortgage payments go from $1,800 to $2,700, I think we're going to see some investors say, well, now I'm cash flow negative. Time to put this puppy on the market because I don't think I want to keep it anymore.
Good point, Frank. And we're already seeing that. We're seeing a lot of people who are calling us and saying, you know, I have an investment property I'd like to sell. And my response is always like, why? Why would you sell your investment property? I said, because I'm coming out of my 5-year fixed at, you know, 1.75 or 1.99 or 2 or whatever it is. And my rate now is going to be 5. I'm no longer cash flow positive. I'm like, eh, well, kind of makes sense, even though I'd never like someone to sell a door. But, you know, when you're not cash flow positive, it's really hard to have an investment. You know what? It's like putting your money in the stock market. You know, It's like a shot in the dark.
I had the same question yesterday, Paul, where a client called me and said, listen, we have an $850,000 home. We only owe $350 on it. And we're looking to buy. I mean, we're in a neighborhood now, and we're looking to move to the country a little bit, but we'd like to maybe hang on to this house. And I went through the numbers with her, and she goes, oh, boy, if I'm leaving some of the equity in the house, it's costing me that much more for the house I'm buying. Again, I said, if we had had the same discussion a year ago when interest rates were at 2.5%, the numbers would have made much more sense. But now, for her to hang on to her house and rent it out, she'll cash flow neutral on the house that she'll rent out, which is really good. The problem is she's still leaving about $250,000 equity in that house that if she sells it, she could use as a down payment to reduce her payment on the house she's moving into. And even though they're making a good income, financially it didn't make sense for her because she says, we don't want to be carrying that big of a mortgage. We'd love to hang on to this house, but it doesn't make any sense. I think we're better off to sell this house and buy this one because I'd rather use that extra equity to bring down my payment. That's where we're seeing a difference this year versus last year because the interest rates have made that much of a difference to people's thinking moving forward.
How many investors do you think are in variable rate mortgages?
Quite a few.
A lot.
Yeah.
So a lot of these people are making that decision today, right? Geez, do I hang on to it or do I sell it?
Yep. That's what Paul's seeing, I think. And that's why there's extra activity of people trying to sell their investment properties. Now, that being said, if they've owned that investment property for 5 years, listen, from a cash flow standpoint, they might be struggling now, but the equity that they've built in that house in the 5 years is absolutely tremendous. They could not have ever thought that they would make that much equity in the last 5 years.
Agreed. Absolutely agreed. Over the last 2 years has made
right
huge gains for anyone who bought over the last, let's say, 5 years.
Boy, so, it should be nice to see that again.
Yeah. I don't think
we'll not ever for buyers, see that but
yeah, I don't think we'll ever see that again. I mean, we went up, you know, over 50% in the last, you know, little bit. So it's ridiculous. But, you know, I think we're going to get back to a more normalized market. And what's a normalized market? I mean, we saw from 2013 to 2016, a normalized market was 1.2%. But then we see other markets have gone up 5, 6, 7%. I think a normal market for us is anywhere between 2 to 4 to 5%, yeah. Somewhere in that range is where we're going to be. You know, next year, I think we'll probably be flat at the 1 to 2% increase. I think 2024, we're going to get back to that 4 to 5%. My opinion.
That's the same thing I say on interest rates. I think a fair market value where the norm should be is between 3 and 4%. If interest rates are between 3 and 4%, our real estate market manages it just fine. Our young Canadians can buy homes. They can afford homes. I think, again, it's got to be relooked at now. We have to look at the 30-year amortization for first-time home buyers. You know, I think they've got to make some changes now. They got to relook at that stress test. You know, adding 2 percentage points to when we've hit the peak. The stress test was put in place because the rates were low and they thought they were low. But now that we've hit close to the peak, maybe it's time to eliminate that 2% premium to qualify for a mortgage. I think they do have to look at some changes moving forward.
Yeah, I mean, unless they think rates are going to 7 or 8%, there's no point in having it, is there?
Well, I don't think that long-term rates at 7 or 8% is going to – it's just not justified. It's just not going to last long-term. So, you know, even if they did go there for short-term, it's just short-term. But then you're qualifying at that rate anyway. And if you think you've hit the peak, then you should have no problem worrying about it when your renewal comes up because that rate should be lower.
Hey, Frank, you never know, right? If I would have said to you a year ago, fixed rates would be at over 5%, you would have said, no way, no way.
You're nuts. Yeah, you're absolutely nuts. It's impossible. And you know what? Yeah. The reason I said it, and listen, I mean, I feel bad because I, you know, on this show, I've promoted variable rate mortgage and I've done it for many years and I've been doing it over the last year. But at the end of the day, I get the data from experts out there, including our Bank of Canada governor, who predicted rates would be going up once in 2023 or 2022 and twice in 2023. Look how far off he is.
So, Frank, you're admitting that this is all your fault?
Yeah, it's my fault.
Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, it's my fault.
Look at your record overall, Frank. Boy. It's not too shabby.
No, I know. But still, you know, you can't help but feel bad for, you know, giving advice on what we didn't see coming at all. Yeah. At all. Not even close.
521-TALK, 521-8255. We'll be right back.
We return to Open House, the Real Estate and Mortgage Show on News Talk 580 CFRA.
Welcome back with Frank Napolitano and Paul Rushforth. A couple of more numbers regarding youth from Stats Canada. These are not surprising, actually. From 2011 to 2021, people who owned a home between the age of 25 and 29 dropped from 44 to 36%. And I think that's going to be skewed a whole lot lower now, right, guys?
I think a lot of it's GTA. I bet you in the GTA, I mean, that. You know, I think in Ottawa, if you look at the last 2 years, there were a lot of young first-time home buyers buying homes because the interest rates were low. The prices were still fairly reasonable, and we had a lot of first-time home buyers. But
yeah, but are you seeing any first-time home buyers now that are 25 to 29?
Agreed. Right now, I mean, with the exception of what we've been getting a lot of calls from is parents looking to help their kids, both with down payment and having to either go on as a co-signer or guarantor. So that we've seen an increase. Some increased activity on, but only because I think they want their kids out of the house and they're starting to accept the fact that so we can either give our kids 50 grand and co-sign with them and we get them out, or they're stuck with us. They're going to live with us for the next 5 years. So
Frank, you brought up a number, I don't know, maybe 6 months ago, and it was something like, you know, how many people are getting their parents involved co-signing? And I think that number you brought up was somewhere in the 30s, 30%. Yep. I'm willing to bet that number is much higher right now.
It will be. Now, again, I mean, first-time home buyers, I think you're seeing it. They're on the sidelines. There's not a lot of them out there. That has probably come down 80 or 90% in the last 6 months alone. So, again, and they are the ones that actually drive our real estate market. They're the ones that drive the economy, in my opinion. So, you know, the fact that they're on the sidelines along with investors, I think really is what's causing what we're seeing, which is houses are staying on the market for long, long periods of time, lots of price reductions, and that's going to continue likely for another few months for sure. So, but first-time home buyers right now, you're right. Parents are either having to get involved, down payment, and or both, along with having to co-sign / guarantee form.
How many kids can you be a guarantor for?
Many as you want. Guarantor.
How many kids does Frank have? I don't know.
I'm asking for you, Paul.
Well, yeah. No, the guarantor program is quite unique because the guarantor is really good because you don't go on title. The parents don't go on title, which is really good. And it doesn't show up on the credit check or on a credit bureau. So one institution, unless you go to the same institution all the time, which, by the way, the major banks will not, generally speaking, they don't accept the guarantor program. They want you honest co-signers. So that's where it impacts whether you have to help another kid down the road. You're qualifying. The guarantor program is the way to go because you can do it for multiple kids and it doesn't impact your credit whatsoever. And if you do it with different lenders, they don't know about it.
If you're a co-signer or a guarantor, do you get the bank statements every month too?
On the guarantor, you do not because you're just a guarantor. But with the guarantor, you have the right to find out information on the mortgage. So you, there's a document that you sign, and it gives you the right to be able to call the mortgage holder, whoever the lender is, and make sure that the mortgage is up to date.
So a guarantor, you're not on title.
Not on title.
Co-signer, you're on title.
You're on title.
Get your credit and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, it shows up everywhere. And even though you might be a 1% owner, you might do a document with the lawyer as a 1% owner. Irregardless of that, at the end of the day, if it shows up on your credit bureau, you are equally responsible. You don't get to only claim 1% of the mortgage payment, not 50%. You have to qualify using all 100% of that mortgage payment.
And how long can you be a guarantor or a co-signer for? Does your name come off over time?
Well, once the primary borrowers qualify on their own. So in some cases, you know, we're having parents co-sign or a guarantor because the kids just don't make enough money yet, so they don't qualify on their own with the rates being higher. Or it could be, you know, they haven't established their credit yet, or they have a whole bunch of other debt that makes it hard for them to qualify. So there's multiple reasons why parents are going on there, but there's no time frame. The time frame is if you or if the primary borrowers now qualify on their own, they can go to the institution they have the mortgage with midterm. You don't have to wait until the 5 years are up. It could be 2 or 3 years in. You can contact the institution you have the mortgage with and let them know, I qualify on my own. I'd like to take my parents off as guarantors or co-signers. Now, if it's guarantors, it's just an administrative task. If it's a co-signer, the lawyers get involved because now you need to remove the parents from the title too. So there is a cost to do it if they're co-signers. If it's guarantor, it's just an administrative thing. So there's no cost.
Years ago, my first house I bought, I just signed an NHL contract. I had my NHL signing bonus, but I had zero credit. So I couldn't even get, I had enough money to buy the house, but I couldn't get a loan.
Yeah.
So my parents co-signed for me. This is when I was 20 or 21. My parents co-signed for me, but I had to wait until my 5-year renewal was up to take my parents off that that mortgage. Now, that was also back in, I don't know what year that was.
Technology was different then, right? So it didn't show up anywhere. I mean, up until about 10 years ago, mortgages never showed up on credit bureaus. Lenders wouldn't know whether you owned one property or five properties. Like, they would have no way of finding out. Now with technology where it is, and like even lawyers, I remember the days when lawyers would have to go to the registry office to register that mortgage on the day of a closing, where today it's all done from the comfort of their desks at their office. So totally different.
So if you co-sign for a mortgage, how much of that mortgage is on your credit report?
All of it. The whole mortgage shows up on your credit report. There is no percentages. You have to understand that when you co-sign on a mortgage on a loan, and I know the parents say, yeah, we co-sign on my kid's car loan, but you know, really they're making the payment. You're 100% responsible for it when it comes to qualifying for other credit down the road or when it comes to if something goes sideways. You know, if your kids stop making the car loan payments, you can't say, or on a mortgage, let me use a mortgage example, where a lot of cases, lawyer will say, hey, you need to go on, but let's just put you on as a 1% owner on the property because, you know, this way for tax purposes, CRA won't come after you, you're only a 1% owner. That's fine and dandy when it comes to that part of it. But when it comes to the mortgage itself, the bank doesn't really care. Your cosign, you are equally responsible for the whole thing. If they can't go after the primary borrowers for it, they'll come after you for the entire mortgage amount.
I understand that point, but on your credit report, it will show the entire amount of mortgage as your debt?
Yep, entire amount. You're responsible for the entire debt.
Is it harder to guarantee or be a guarantor than a cosigner?
Major banks, generally speaking, don't accept the guarantor. They want the parents or siblings to go on as cosigners because it's stronger, obviously. We've got non-bank lenders who coincidentally work with the big banks, but non-bank lenders that are more than open to do the guarantor program, even with 5% down or 10% down through the insurer, the default insurer is okay with it if the lending institution's okay with it. So we've had a lot of success getting the guarantor program approved, and parents love it because they don't want to be on title and they don't want it showing up in their credit bureau either, but they have faith that their kids can afford the house. They just don't qualify for it because of the rules.
You know, Frank, a couple of years ago, I was actually going to ask you to be a guarantor on a mortgage.
Oh, please.
But over the last 2 years, I've saved so much money not buying breakfast that I probably don't need you.
No, that's funny.
I don't need you as a guarantor anymore.
Your friends are laughing. Every time you say this, Paul, your friends laugh because all I hear from them is every time you go to dinner with them, they pay.
There's a new tagline for Mortgage Brokers Ottawa. How many homes are you going to buy with the money you save by buying breakfast? 521-TALK, 521-8255. We will be right back.
We return to Open House, the Real Estate and Mortgage Show on News Talk 580 CFRA.
Welcome back with Frank Napolitano and Paul Rushforth. Paul, how long before we clear this inventory of every house sold now?
Well, you know, if you had thousands and thousands and thousands of now buyers, it should be gone.
Are we at around the 3 month mark or no?
Well, yes. As far as absorption, yes. Yeah. We're around the 3 month mark. When the numbers come out, though, for September, like I said, certain areas are in a strong seller's market, certain areas are in a balanced market, and certain areas are in a buyer's market. But citywide, we're teetering towards the balanced market now, which is not a bad thing. When you're on the low end of a balanced market, usually you have sellers, fair for the sellers and fairs for the buyers. And I think that's where we're teetering towards, which is not a bad thing. I know if you're a seller, the biggest thing that's really making you mad is, you know, your neighbor just sold for $100,000 more than you're about to sell for. You know, they were artificially high because of what was going on. So just know that even if you sell for $100,000 less, it's probably $100,000 more than what your house should be worth if we were in a normal market and we didn't go through those, you know, 18 months of craziness.
See, what people have to remember with both mortgages and real estate, we're coming off two unprecedented years for home prices and for low rates, both.
Absolutely. And I tell the story, like, you know, I put out a video the other day, and the joke of it was, you know, we're done. It's crashing. We're over. It's a market bubble. Stop listening to the news. You know, like, we're up over the last 18 months, $182,000 on the average sale price.
Yeah.
Like, not normal. Like, if you would ask me 2 years ago, would we be up $80,000 on the average sale price? I'd say not a chance. That's way too high. We're up $182,000 on the average sale price. So just think, if you're selling your house, you didn't get as much as your neighbor did in February or March of this year. Think about what you would have got if we didn't go through this crazy market. And that's the hardest thing dealing with sellers right now. Is that's my job, is babysitting sellers right now, because I can understand they're anxious, they're angry, they're stressed because their house is not selling. It will sell. Don't worry. And don't worry about what your neighbor got. We're in a new normal market. Look what your neighbor got 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, not what they got 6 months ago, because you will be disappointed if that's what you want to do.
Yeah. If you want to compare to your neighbor 3 years ago.
Well, exactly. Or, you know, I was with a seller the other day and he's like, what do you think my house is worth? And I said, probably around 800,000. He's like, what? My neighbor got 875, you know, 6 months ago and this and that. And I said, okay. If we didn't have these last 18 months, I would have told you your house is worth about 625.
Yep.
You know, now I'm telling you it's worth 800. So I'm like, are you really losing? You're not losing at all. Yes, you might have got more in February, March, April, but it's gone. I mean, hindsight's 2020, it's gone. Look at what the new normal is right now. And when I'm looking at comparables now for clients or even for myself, I won't even go back 2 months. I'll go back a month, maybe a month and a half to look for my comparables, because as I start going back to 2, 3, 4 months for looking for comparables, they're skewed.
Yeah,
they're
they don't make sense. Right?
They don't make any sense. So, I mean, I love it when I see, you know, I'll have to adjust for time. If I have to go back 4 months, I'll adjust for time and, you know, home price index and things like that to where what the trend is right now and use that math. But I love it when I can see comparables from 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, 1 month ago.
Now, where do we find these videos that you make? I went to OnlyFans. I didn't see it there anywhere.
They haven't. Jocelyn's not doing her job. They're supposed to be on OnlyFans. That's where I
thought. Well, he's only got one fan.
Oh, yeah, only fan. And she's out of town.
She's out of town. Yeah, she's in Slovakia, my only fan.
Hey, Frank, we can still get some mortgages from you for under 5%, right?
Yeah, there still are. Again, some of the fixed rates if you're buying. So here's the categories that you still get mortgages at about 4.59% for a 5-year fix. If you're buying a home with less than 20% down, that you can get 4.59. If you're buying a home with a 25-year amortization and your down payment is 35% or more, you can get 4.59. If you've got an existing mortgage that's coming up for renewal, and this is what's keeping us really busy right now, because the banks, most of them are well into the fives when it comes to a 5-year fix, but the non-bank lenders are at 4.59. If your mortgage is coming up for renewal, you're not refinancing it, you just want to move it over the way it is right now, and it's either at the time when you bought it with less than 20% down, so it's still a default insured mortgage, or because the values have gone up so much over the last 5 years, you're likely at 65% of the value of the home or less on your mortgage. That's another circumstance where you can get 4.59% for a 5-year fix. So there's lots of opportunities to get below the 5%. The question is, you know, do you lock in for 4.59% now for 5 years and regret it maybe a year from now if rates have come back down? But if you're nervous, like a lot of people are, seeing prime go up as much as it has and listening to Tiff Macklem and all the other Fed saying they're going to continue to raise prime rate, then for most people, they're saying, you know what, I'm just going to bite the bullet and I'm just going to take a 5-year fix, because at least I know that that's the rate I'm going to get for the next 5 years. And I don't have to worry about what's going to happen the next 6 months or 12 months with all these increases maybe still continuing.
What's a 1-year rate?
Frank, I'm going to make a prediction and you tell me if you agree with my prediction. I do agree that rates are going to start to come down by summer next year, and we're going to creep down potentially a point and a half. Do you think that's true?
Well, if you say a point and a half, I say yes. But if you say it's going to happen by next year, I would question that. I would say that as they start to come down, unless we have some major catastrophe like a pandemic or something else, I think that the rates will come down gradually, and we will see them in the threes in probably 2024. I think we're stuck with the fours for the next year or so.
If they're hoping to get inflation to 2%, that's not going to come down as quick as they went
up. It's not.
I guess the point I'm making is if you have to make a decision between fixed and variable right now, I believe rates are coming down. Frank believes rates are coming down. I would stick with the variable.
Or 1 year, right?
Well, the problem is that what we're going to see, and we're starting to see it with the bond markets, is that the 1, 2, and 3-year bond markets are higher than the 5-year bond market. So you're actually going to pay more for a 1-year fix than you are for a 5-year fix. It doesn't make any sense.
Well, it does to the bank.
Yeah. Well, to the bank, of course. But still, I mean, to the consumer, you know, they're nervous, because if they don't want to go into variable now because they think rates are still going up, they're going to feel the same way a year from now, probably.
Birthdays?
Birthdays, I've got a few. Our president, Sherry Kreese, celebrating her birthday this week, almost a junior senior. She's creeping close to being a junior senior. So happy birthday to Sherry. Luca Guercio from our firm celebrating his birthday this week. My goddaughter, Selena, celebrating her birthday on Tuesday. And our commercial guy, who I hope to have on the show one day, because there's lots of commercial mortgage opportunities out there, Brent Babcock, celebrating his birthday. And then my good buddy, Paolo Herrato, who's turned 60 today, the old man. So happy birthday to Paolo.
Steve, we might have to stretch this show about another half an hour.
We really have to start doing. We have to start doing birthdays a half hour early.
I have one birthday. Kathleen, my listing coordinator, has her birthday today. So happy birthday, Kathleen. And I do want to give a shout out to my girlfriend who is in Slovakia and listening to our show.
Well, there's one.
Yeah, there's one.
Are you sure she's listening?
Well, she said she's listening to the show.
Frank N. at MortgageBrokersOttawa.com. Paul at PaulRushford.com. Have a great week, gentlemen.
Have a great week, and please continue to support local businesses and charities.